Time now for our weekly chat with the experts at ETF.com, the world's leading independent authority on ETFs.
I think we're seeing a different way of ETFs being launched.
The real kicker was governance, selling a private data. They really let down their customers repeatedly.
Drew, thanks for joining me this week. You ready for some rapid-fire questions?
I am, Nate. Thank you. I'm ready for your ground balls.
I feel like my challenge is always keeping you reined in, right? I know once you get going on some of these topics, we could probably go for an entire segment, but we'll try to keep each of these to a few minutes or so.
I'll edit myself.
All right, so let's start with a topic that I do feel like has been flying under the radar a bit, and that's the top-performing ETF this year. And you look at the numbers, this isn't even close. The BreakWave Dry Bulk Shipping ETF, ticker symbol BDRY, this thing is up 258% as of yesterday. The next closest is the Microsector's U.S. Big Oil Index 3x Leveraged ETN. That's at 174%. And if you exclude leverage and inverse products, the next closest ETF performance-wise to a BDRY is the First Trust Natural Gas ETF at, listen to this, 61%. So 258% versus 61%. Give me your hot take on this one. Do you agree it's not getting as much attention as you might expect?
It's an anomaly. I think it's very interesting. I mean, if you look at the 12-month, it's even more impressive. It's over 400%. It was trading approximately this date a year ago at $4.60. Now it's at $25. Probably the classic reopening trade. Obviously, hindsight's 2020, but a year ago, things were looking pretty dire. We literally had cargo container ships. We had dry bulk ships sitting in the ocean that couldn't even go into port because of health restrictions. So it was a very low point, obviously, and it's been a huge snapback. Particularly over the last 6 months or so has really climbed because we've seen freight prices just skyrocket because demand has hit the dry bulk area. Dry bulk is different than container ships that you see that, you know, cars and food come in. Dry bulk is literally iron ore, soybeans, corn that is literally shipped in a different types of cargo containers throughout the world, and is also one of the keys in terms of commodity demand indicators. A lot of iron ore comes from Australia and goes to China. And once that starts kicking in, and we've seen this huge upcycle now in commodities all over the board from ag to metals to iron ore. So dry bulk shipping is in huge demand right now. And when demand goes up, it's surge pricing, classic surge pricing. Freighters will charge more as demand goes up. And right now we're just seeing incredible demand for shipping compared to a year ago. And thus we're seeing this incredible return. A couple things, a couple caveats. It is very expensive. It's over 3% expense ratio. It has a spread of over 50 basis points. So you're looking at 400 basis points just to get a profit. When you're making 400% over the year, sure, who cares? But just for perspective, since its inception, it's flat. Barely has broken even, maybe at 1% over the last 3 years. So it's a very volatile industry, very supply and demand, price surging. So what's happening today is not going to be what's happening in a year from now.
I think you absolutely hit the nail on the head with everything you said there. I mean, clearly the ETF is part of the global economic reopening trade and, you know, perhaps a pretty pure one because dry bulk shipping, to your point, does tend to do really well in commodity up cycles. And you think about what's going on with lumber right now and other commodities, everything's booming. So this clearly stands to benefit. One other thing I'll add before we move on here, this ETF launched in March of 2018 and it literally sat there with like 2 million in assets. Basically, it's seed money. It sat with that until February or March of last year. And, you know, started getting a little bit of traction. But even at the beginning of this year, it was only around 25 mil, and it's now well over 100 million. I think it, you know, another example of an ETF that sort of waited patiently and now may be having its moment in the sun.
It's hard to do. You know, I like to say some issuers leave the movie early. You know, we saw it with the airlines ETF. We've seen it with the auto industry ETF, and there's times when those just hit. It's the blind squirrel finding a nut, if you will. But when they hit, they can stick around. So, you know, there is some, you know, credit to you know, persevering. It's expensive, but if you can last, sometimes that the ball strikes the bat, and they hit a home run this year.
All right. Anytime the topic of BDRI comes up, I can't help but talk about Bitcoin ETFs. Though I guess actually I can't help but talk about Bitcoin ETFs anytime, right? But I'm not sure if you remember back in, actually, I think it was like 2018, Van Eck used BDRI in their presentation at the SEC on why a Bitcoin ETF should exist. So they were basically saying Bitcoin was a deeper market than freight futures. It was every bit as transparent. And so if BDRI existed, then so should a Bitcoin ETF, which I agree with that, by the way. But the question I have for you is the new SEC chairman, Gary Gensler, he testified before the House Committee on Financial Services last week. And then he was on CNBC on Friday. And I've got to tell you, after hearing his comments, I guess I'll say I think I've lost a lot of optimism on a Bitcoin ETF being approved this year. And let me read a few of his quotes on Bitcoin. I tweeted these out, too. He said, quote, we need greater investor protection there. He said, quote, we don't have a federal regime overseeing the crypto exchanges. He also said, quote, there's a gap in our system to protect investors. I mean, that does not sound like a commissioner ready to approve a Bitcoin ETF.
Well, a couple things. If you're trying to read the tea leaves of regulators during congressional testimonies, you might as well try reading hieroglyphics. They're not going to show their hand. And I'm still feeling pretty good about Q1 2022, which was my original set date, although I was thinking about hedging lately. But I think it's still pretty strong. And the other thing, too, there's some key players that you would expect to be in the front of the line if this thing was pending. I still will point at Bitwise that has yet to refile. By the way, they're launching their first ETF today on a sort of a blockchain similar to BLOK. So they're in the ETF game now, which actually might help them. But and also there's a company, in fact, we just saw it today, Kathy Woods joining the board of directors of Anum and 21 Shares, which is a European exchange-traded product issuer, has several ETP products in the crypto space in Switzerland, elsewhere. And they're coming to America. They're going to try to file a Bitcoin ETF here in the U.S. So I think there's some major players that don't seem rushed. And I think that's something to keep an eye on. Van Eck is just the straw man here. Just because they got first in the line to refile, that doesn't make them first to be considered. And as I've been told from some inside sources, there's some real structural problems still with the existing applications that are out there that haven't addressed the major concerns of the SEC. And again, I'll wait to see some other filings come in. But I think things are going to speed up a little bit. I think once Gensler gets in there and gets his hands and feet wet to what's really happening, I think he's going in cautiously, and I think that's been the attitude of the SEC. And I think we're going to be surprised at how quick their tune will change.
No, I hope you're right. I mean, you mentioned them being cautious. The fact is they've been cautious for 8 years now, right? I mean, the first Bitcoin ETF filing back in 2013. But I'll just say I'm standing by my prediction of 2021. It's just seeing his comments last week, it was tough to feel optimistic. But maybe, you know, he's just throwing you know, everybody off the trail a little bit and giving himself some space. And, you know, maybe here later this year we'll see some progress.
I mean, think about it. If he walked in the door and said, like, Bitcoin's been way overdue, it wouldn't seem like there's a lot of regulatory diligence going on. So I think he's got to come across that way. Like I said, I think time will tell. I think by September, October, we're going to see some action during the summer. But I still think that I wouldn't try to read too much into a new SEC chairman's initial comments to Congress, whether that's going to dictate the future of Bitcoin or not.
Drew, you mentioned Kathy Wood. So another hot topic right now, and it's certainly one we've covered plenty, though it's always an interesting topic, and that's ARK Invest. So if you look, the ARK Innovation ETF, ARKK, that's now down nearly 40% from its high in February. It was down 10% just last week. It's been a challenging last 2 days as well. And I'm already seeing the Kathy Wood and ARK haters taking victory laps. Though I feel like we should mention ARKK is still up over 70% over the past year. I think that's important. But I saw a stat I saw a stat from Ritholtz's Michael Batnick. This was last Friday. And the stat was that retail investors have put money into this thing for 109 of the last 110 days. And so the question I want to ask you is, do you think this continues? Like, do you think this hot retail money will stay invested even though we've had this 40% drawdown?
I think people are trying to write the last act to Cathie Wood very prematurely. I think we're in the third, fourth inning of this ballgame. I mean, do people really think that ARK ETFs are going to go over 100% every single year? I mean, the naivety out there is kind of striking. So we're obviously in a revision of the mean. Whether that's not because of her, it's because of the space she's in. We're seeing it with the Qs. Yesterday were one of the biggest declines in the Qs we've seen in the last year or so. So it's going across the board, and the tide is taking her with her. Time will tell. You know, are investors in this to make money quickly, or are they in this to make money over the long term with a long horizon? I always look back when I see these, you know, last year she was celebrated as the greatest thing in the world, and this year it's like, see, I knew this was going to happen. I mean, we love to build these up and we love to tear them down. And I always look at Amazon way back in the day. I'm talking 20 years ago when people were hand-wringing over, you know, would Amazon get to $20? You know, and it was up 10% over the last year. Now it's over 50. I mean, it really depends on your horizon. And if you're in it to make 100% over the next year, you know, if you make money quickly, you can lose money quickly. I don't think that's her game plan. I think she's got a long horizon. And if people are looking to make, you know, 70, 80, 90% on a fund, they're just kidding themselves. Let's see how it goes over the next 2 years before you write her obituary.
Yeah, I think the key here is the investor's time horizon, because I saw in Barron's last week, they reported that
That's
50% of the money in ARKK is now underwater. Just because if you look at when the bulk of flows came into the ETF, it was over the past 9 months, and this ETF now has a negative return since the end of November. So a lot of that new money hasn't fared well. And so, to your point, if an investor was coming in hoping to just hit an immediate home run and instead they're negative, well, the broader market is up, you just wonder how much conviction they'll have to stay invested.
Well, and that, and time will tell. But again, I mean, you know, the new money's underwater for a month. I mean, my gosh, come on. This is investing. This isn't, you know, a Ponzi scheme where you're going to get a return every month. So, I mean, investors have to open their eyes and look at why are they in it and how long do they want to be in it for? If you don't have the guts to hang out through some declines, you know, go get into bonds.
All right. A few minutes left. I want to go to a couple of ETFs that are performing really well this year. And these are actually ones we haven't talked about before. The iShares Global Timber and Forestry ETF, ticker WOOD. And the Invesco MSCI Global Timber ETF, ticker CUT, both great ticker symbols. And, of course, I think everyone's heard about the skyrocketing price of lumber, and these two ETFs are sort of a roundabout way to play this. So I looked at performance. Both of these are up over 20% on the year, up 80, 90% over the past year. Any thoughts on what's going on with these?
Well, I mean, there's obviously a big story going on in the lumber market. And again, talk about reopening trade. I mean, home builders are outperforming the lumber market. I mean, that's how crazy it is. So the demand is obviously there, just like we were talking about with BDRI. Wood and CUT are basically large cap funds, certainly have a tilt toward certain parts of not just lumber, but just the paper industry. I think Weyerhaeuser and some paper companies are some of the top constituents. But it has been outperforming SPY. I think it's up; both are up about 20% versus SPY. They're very similar. I don't think there's a whole lot of difference in terms of performance. Again, I would caution against getting caught up in headlines, trying to match a headline with a specific, very niche ETF. Again, you're trying to make money too late again. The lumber market's flying high, and at some point, as we know with commodities, price will slow demand. So we'll see. I think the lumber whole thing is a little bit, again, part of a whole big story about commodities, the reopening, the demand for materials, and this is part of it. Would I jump in and out of Wood and CUT? No. If you want to believe in that and you think you can get a little bit more return, you can. But overall, it's really a large cap fund. Outperforms, underperforms SPY by a few points historically. Nothing to get too excited about. I think the iShares fund has $400 million, and the other one has $100 million. So niche products, interesting. Certainly, again, fun but in the ETF world to have all these different kind of funky ETFs. But again, nothing to start, in my opinion, reconsider buying them.
I do find the underlying story here with lumber to be pretty interesting. So, you know, effectively, and you were alluding to this, what happened was there's a huge mismatch in supply and demand because these sawmills, they ramped down production last year once the pandemic began setting in. And then you look since that time, we've had this housing boom, right? And people doing all sorts of home improvement projects. And I think another factor here, too, were curbs that were put in place by the Canadian government, just in terms of the trees that could be cut down, because Canadian timber is used for a lot of U.S. home building. And so you sort of add all these factors up, and that's why lumber's up something like 300% since before the pandemic. I do think it's an interesting story, but I always agree with your sentiment in trying to sort of match an ETF to the headlines. You got to be careful there.
One thing I will point out, though, that we're just talking about inflation over and over again. We're seeing these incredible increases in shipping costs, incredible rates in lumber. That's all going to be passed along to the customer and to the consumer. So one of the things that's interesting that I don't really see people talking about is really pointing to this, that we're seeing all these little weird niches of lumber and freight that are just exploding in prices. You know, where is that going to end up? It's not going to end up in it's going to end up in the consumer's pocketbook, and they're going to have to pay for it at the end. So I'd really be cautious about a lot of what we're talking about here. It isn't just an investment play, but down the road, there's going to be some economic consequences to these higher commodity prices.
All right, Drew, time for one last hot take. You have about a minute here. Let me ask you about ETF flows. So through April, more money has come into stock ETFs than did all of last year, which by the way, you look, 2020 was a record year for ETFs. It wasn't like that was some slouch of a year. Now, it was definitely heavier on bond ETFs, but still, what do you think about ETF flow so far in 2021?
Well, it's just been monster, right? I mean, I think we'll get around 400 million plus, but I mean, we're looking at almost $500 billion in the first half of the year. We're already topping, I think, most of the years except maybe three or four. We're sitting at about $340 million for the year so far. And it's just been this incredible appetite for equity ETFs, despite being at all-time highs, despite some of the different glitches that we've seen that markets typically encounter. But as you said, I mean, the last year was fixed income all the way. This year it's all equity. And frankly, fixed income's having a decent year as well. I mean, the $60 billion is nothing to sneeze at in 6 months either in U.S. fixed income when you have higher rates all across the board and a very difficult market to navigate. I think what we're going to experience at some point, you'd think, is a slowdown. But what typically happens, as we've seen over the years with ETF flows actually get stronger as the year goes on. So that's what's going to be really interesting. In fact, the strongest quarter is fourth quarter typically. There's rebalancing going on. There's people trying to set up from last year, trying to take losses. So we haven't even gotten into sort of the rebalanced flows that we're going to start seeing toward the end of the year. So I don't think we're going to hit a trillion. I wouldn't bet money on that, but it's going to be pretty darn close.
Well, Drew, very well done on the rapid fire questions. Fun stuff as always. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me, Nate.
That was ETF.com's Drew Voros.